All right. Welcome to the podcast that nobody asked for, but we're doing it anyway. It's called Two and a Half Bens.
Woohoo!
Yes, it's a tech podcast where we get together and talk about the tech issues that you really care about. It's a different kind of a tech podcast.
Which show is that? That's not what I came to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's that we really care about. Well, you, I mean, as in us, right? Because it's not that it is. We are not the tech podcast that is hosted by a chief twit or a tech bro. No,
you fucked that all together. Give up now. Abandon ship. Abort. Abort.
No, exactly.
I heard a Czech bro, and I'm like, what? What do the Czech people have to do?
Seriously, I don't know what the fuck you were rehearsing in the bathroom, but keep rehearsing.
You know what? It's fine. Hey, the sooner we get away from the rails, the quicker we can get to the freeform part of the show.
Exactly. I mean, to be honest with you, he blindsided me. That was not the music opening I was expecting.
So that was a music opening?
I know, right?
I thought you had your Casio keyboard from 1988 left on in the background.
That is actually Master of Puppets on the hard drive.
This was on the Flopatron. This one was on floppy disk. That's why it's set.
Yeah. That's kind of the vibe we're going with, because
I'm pretty sure back in the day, like if you got one of those Casio keyboards that you plug it into your computer and you just hit the Metallica button, that's what you get.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, my dad had one of those keyboards, scarily enough. So anyway, I'm Phone Boy.
Oh God help us! I'm Phoenix.
And I'm Ryan Bemrose.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the only one here willing to give my real name.
Oh. Well, hey, I don't give a fuck if everybody knows who I am.
People can find me. I'm pretty easy to find. But anyway, we actually do have a website now. We actually have a 2.5bens.com. I set it
amazing.
Up today. Yeah.
Fancy.
Yeah, fancy.
And we're almost God, professional.
Yeah, I was going to say, am I professional? Oh, yeah, which is actually reminds
me.
No,
you are not.
No,
we're
not.
To put
you
and the word professional in the same category after the
clips are going to be
people have heard.
Yeah, I mean.
I clearly don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
I mean, truly, you really, at times, I wonder.
Yeah, but I got it going, and I actually even got it into, I'm going to bring this up. This is not an actual story, but this is something that occurred while I was setting this up, because, of course, I also submitted the show to Apple Podcasts, and I realized something, because it didn't actually validate that I owned that podcast, right? There was no, like, double check, because, you know, my Apple ID and the ID on my podcast are different. Now, I think I have other podcasts with the same ID, but I think I realized when I started looking around in the interface, you can add any goddamn podcast to this thing you want, right? Now, okay, what data are you going to get by doing that? Well, okay, maybe you can, you know, get somebody's listenership or something. I guess it's not really that much.
You're saying is you could go in and claim to own like the Planet Rage podcast or something.
Yes, or Angry Tech News or something like that. But I wouldn't.
No, nobody owns that. Nobody would. Apple wouldn't believe you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, from what I've heard, rumors, nobody does that anymore either.
Exactly. Well. Oh boy. Well, okay. So what do y'all got this week? Because
I don't know. You seem to be the one who came out with the big dick tech energy tonight. So why don't you start this thing off?
I'm going to go ahead and start, by the way, with a trigger warning. I am probably going to be making throat sounds into the microphone because smoke season in the Pacific Northwest has started.
Yes, I understood, and it's not the holy herb kind. It's the greenery. Literally around you. Yeah. Yes,
it's the British Columbia is burning and hotboxing my state.
Yes, I'm familiar with that season. Having lived.
If only they would equally plant the weed with the trees. Then hotboxing BC would not.
This
be
would
that
be a
bad.
Very different kind of podcast.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so. I think
it would give new meaning to higher consciousness.
It would certainly give new meaning to higher consciousness, and maybe it would get the people's head out of their asses in that place. Well,
you wonder why the Canadians are so calm. It's all the weed.
Yeah, Well, that and the euthanasia or something. Or wait a minute. Something that and euthanasia.
Where the fuck did Canada and euthanasia come in?
Have you seen their? They have a socialized medical system, honey. That's actually
Canada's not even in Asia.
Yes,
exactly. I know, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's euthanasia or the kids in America or something. I don't know.
Okay, if somebody doesn't do a tech story, I'm going to start talking about
it. I was about to say, phone boy, stick to what you know. Talk tech.
Okay, so this is actually something that's kind of big. So we all remember this CrowdStrike thing that happened last year that seemed to take down a bunch of shit. And
No, I'm pretty sure we don't. It happened more than a week ago.
Yeah, exactly.
The modern... attention span.
You can't possibly be talking about the thing that took down every airline save for Southwest because they were running some like 3,000-year-old fucking outdated yeah, tech.
Exactly. But so Microsoft is making changes to basically prevent security vendors from being able to do what they were allowed to do because you know you have to put things in the kernel and to protect things in the kernel and yeah.
You mean getting non-kernel code out of the kernel?
Yes.
Perish the thought.
Yeah, exactly. Which
Shirley, you just.
Yeah, and I am serious and don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
So, but this is, and I work for a vendor that's probably going to be impacted by this, just like every other vendor. I don't know, to the extent that this is going to be something, you know, how much things are going to be impacted. But it seems like, you know, and this just seems like they're trying to put the horse back in the barn, right? This has been designed in such a way that it's like trying to build a permanent sandcastle, if that makes any sense.
It means that if you're not going to let somebody who understands security into the kernel, then Microsoft becomes responsible for securing their own damn. I'm not sure this is something they're capable of.
Well, yeah.
I was going to say inmates running the asylum.
Yeah, considering some of the mistakes they make. I mean, in terms of like the number of CVEs, yeah, they're probably like the number one company, right?
It's not just mistakes, and I understand that most people not having actually stood in the halls of the Death Star will really get this, but I can forgive a lot of coding mistakes as long as, you know, when some industrious tester or security analyst comes out and says, hey, you've got a security hole here, or you've got a bug here, or you've got something wrong here. If you fix it, then all is forgiven as far as I'm concerned. I'm a very forgiving person. I don't even hold grudges longer than 10 or 15 or 20 or 50 years. But it's when a bug gets filed or a security hole gets reported, and I have been in so many of those meetings where they're like, well, we're on a shipping schedule and it would be very difficult and take, you know, 2 weeks of a developer's time, and our schedule is tight. So we're just going to push the fix off to the next release, which in Microsoft parlance means put it into a bug database and forget about it for the remainder of the release. And the other part of that a lot of people don't realize is that Microsoft dumps and throws away their bug database every release. They just get a new one. It's the quickest way to make sure that your stats are good, that your bug stat, you don't start the release with a whole bunch of technical debt because you just throw away your bugs. This was one of the most exciting and frustrating things about being a tester at Microsoft, you know, even 20 years ago, was the culture, if the bug isn't in the database, it's not a bug. So let's throw the database away.
But this is not something isolated that we're just seeing with this incident or this company. A lot of companies, as you both know, as soon as you say as a DevOps, hey, I need another week or something because we need to fix X, Y, and Z, The people that are bean counting or whatever are like, nope, push it out, rush. We promised it on this day. We're going to deliver it on this day. It doesn't matter how insecure it is. We have to keep a deadline. That is where the push and pull of the bean counters and the DevOps comes in.
In fairness, that's not just a Microsoft thing. That is a...
No, I was saying. Yeah. It wasn't just exclusive to Microsoft.
That is a direct result of move fast and break things. The overarching Silicon Valley culture, you know, the thing that started with Steve Jobs saying, you know, real artists ship, which back in the day was probably the right thing to do, but then somehow turned into, yeah, it doesn't matter how many bugs are in, you just need to get it to market first. And then maybe we'll fix the bugs in the next version or the next one or the next eventually, and probably not.
Well, it's always push it off to the next update, to the next this, to the next that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah. Having worked inside of a software company for a long time, yeah, there's some bugs that you just kind of look at and you go, yeah, and it, it, It doesn't. I don't know. It's like it has to matter to somebody on the dev team, it seems like, in order for things to. And if it doesn't, if it's not their pet thing, or if they're not being told by, you know, by the pointy haired bosses that they might have to say, hey,
if your team is running correctly, then and everybody's on the same page, then you can get somebody interested, or you can. I mean, they're being paid to do this.
Right, but how do you get the people who are above that to understand?
Well, you don't build a culture where they're prima donnas.
But it's not a prima donna culture. It's literally comes down to the money. And because for every day that you're not rolling this product out, you are costing the company money. The insecurity factor doesn't matter. You know as well as I do, as does Foamboy. Security is not prioritized in these instances. It's all about
because customers don't value it.
The only time customers care about it is after they've been compromised.
Yeah, after it's been compromised, it becomes the only thing that's important. But the day you're shipping, what you're doing is rolling the dice. It's actually a very rational calculation. It's like, okay, so we have does the math, 1 in 18,000 chance that this will result in catastrophic data explosion for our customer. We have fewer than 15,000 customers right now, so let's go ahead and roll the dice and say we're probably not going to get compromised in V1. And then inertia takes over, and you're like V2, 3, 5, now we're at V37, and it's all just, you know, legacy code now. Yeah,
hold on, isn't there a recent... Oh, shit, never mind. That touches your day job, phone boy. Never mind.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, we
I
do.
Was gonna say, isn't there a legacy code that recently there was a CVE discovered that goes back like fuck years?
Well,
but I didn't realize that was your company. Well, sorry.
But Microsoft has code like that all the time, right?
Yeah, all of them do.
Yeah, everybody.
You know what the last thing I worked on before I left was?
What was that?
The C runtime library.
Oh boy.
MSVCRT.dll.
Oh dear God! Yeah, that pretty.
Okay, so could somebody catch the half of Ben up on this?
Yeah, this. So okay, so a lot of other programs
it's older than Phoneboy and I. I'll start with that.
Yeah. Okay, well that pretty much heard. We're going back to pre-COBOL.
Not quite like that far back, but it's basic. But it is basically something that like about a lot of programs link to, right? Because it's
everything.
Yeah, pretty much everything. Yeah.
You write your code in Python, and the Python standard library somewhere along the line is linking to MSVCRT. If there is a program on the average user's hard drive that is not linking to that, it's a rare, rare thing. MSVCRT is the runtime for the C language, and all of the lowest level stuff is the C language. Now, the one advantage is it's not a dynamic runtime, which means that it's only brought in at compile time. So if you screw it up, it only affects everything that's compiled from here on, which admittedly is every update to every program. But basically, this is the level of legacy code that if you screw anything up, then all of computing collapses. And I am not even exaggerating.
Well, I mean, that makes total sense.
And Microsoft has a lot of stuff like that. This is probably the most extreme example. It was also one of the things that burned me out because we had developers who were trying to fix bugs in it. And for every hour that a developer spent fixing bugs was, I'm not kidding, probably 30 hours worth of my time to test that shit. And that it was one of the reasons I left. It was like, I can't handle this anymore.
So I have a question. Because I think I've always wanted to ask you this question, Rye, so I'm going to ask it. What is your opinion of Python as a programming language?
I agree that it's a programming language.
Do you hate it? Do you like it? Do you use it?
I don't have that much emotional investment in it. I have used it. I am familiar with it. This is not unique to Python. I have to back away a bit when I see somebody taking it on as their religion. It is At its core, it's an interpreted scripting language, which has enough features to write full-on programs. But at the same time, you can write full-on programs in Bash if you want. Scripting languages are Turing complete. It's not the right choice for everything, but there's a lot of people who, you know, literally think it's, you know, treated as their religion.
Yeah, the cybersecurity they use it quite a bit. So it's a common language there.
You know, as it probably wouldn't be my first choice if I were writing something new, unless I was trying to write into a platform that had really good support for it. It is actually a fantastic choice because of it. It's so cross-platform for connecting with and interacting with other things, which is really I mean, that's the appeal of a scripting language. A scripting language is generally supposed to be the glue in between programmic components. That's sort of the difference between the scripting and a, I guess you could say, programming language. Python fits the scripting niche very, very well. You can use it to automate other programs. You can use it to automate your operating system. You can use it to, it's fantastic for prototyping. As an interpreted language, it's not usually my first go-to for anything that has any kind of performance requirements, although, I mean, it's not bad. I don't know. It's also not a language that I came up with and became, you know, there are certain languages that I have had to use and become very, very familiar with and in-depth. You know, my first love was GW Basic. I'm not talking like Visual Basic or anything. This was the straight up command line Basic that shipped with DOS. I learned C very early on. C++ became a really big thing, although at Microsoft, the version that they use is called C+. Well, I call it C+ because it is C, which uses objects and the occasional template, but generally never, you know, at least for through Windows 8. Didn't use any of the STL.
I mean, the reason I asked that, as everyone knows, with being only half a Ben, I have not had a lot of exposure to Python. I've had like zero exposure to C or C++. The majority of what they've kept us in is like Linux, Java, shit like that.
Linux is not a programming language.
Well, I'm just saying, like, the things that I've learned, in fairness. And I know Linux is an operating system. I'm not stupid. But what I'm saying is, of the things that I have learned, Python and C and C++ and things are not things yet they've touched upon. And I suspect that we will have very brief interaction with it during the educational environment experience. So I just kind of wanted to get, you know, as a gray beard dude named Ben, you know, I mean, I live with Phoneboy. I can fucking ask him anything. I only get to ask you these questions when we're doing two and a half Bens, basically.
But so you understand how the question you asked, you ask four different programmers in a room, what is your favorite language? And then all you have to do is hit record and you've got a 4-hour podcast of arguing.
Not wrong. I yes, mean, exactly. You're totally not wrong. And this is one of the reasons why Phoneboy and I, or at least I, wanted to do this, is because I love the fact I can get two different perspectives, plus the perspectives of any, you know, dudes named Ben in the chat that might throw their
or dudes named Bernadette, as the case may be.
Either way, I'm going to get some really great feedback from these conversations, and people are going to put it in their ears and maybe get some.
So actually, I'm remembered that in college, I actually attended talking about programming languages. You've heard the name Donald Knuth before, right? I actually attended a lecture by him when I was at Santa Clara. It was funny because at the time he was talking about a programming language that self-documented itself. Because as you know, nobody actually likes to write comments in their code. I mean,
let me drop in a bit of philosophy that I've had from way back. To a person who is capable, who is fluent in a programming language and capable of reading it, almost every language is self-documenting. If you write clearly, you don't write obfuscated, you follow some best practices with regards to, you know, using white space, using descriptive names that make sense. Languages can be C can be self-documenting if you name your variables correctly and don't screw up the syntax.
Tiny language.
I've had the argument, and I know I'm dominating this, but I have had the argument with plenty of coders who the kind of people who, for example, believe in tyrannical linters, that they will put more effort into the style guide than they will into the code itself, saying like rejecting pull requests if you have a single space after an equals instead of a double space or something, whatever their style guide. There are people like that because they're
that
saying,
annoys
well,
the shit out
is,
of me.
It is very important that it be you be able to read it. I'm like, then learn to freaking read. Far as I'm concerned, if somebody is capable of comprehending a language and not just casually picking through, you should be able to make out what it does. Even if I put my curly brace on the line before instead of the next line, there's something wrong in your brain if that causes you to be unable to read my code.
Yeah, the only thing that should fuck up is maybe as a syntax error on a compiler at best.
Well, no, all of this assumes that you've fed the compiler properly anyway.
But I agree with you that, if my curly brace is on the third line and not the second, like, fuck you.
Yeah,
you can still know what my code is supposed to do.
Yeah, however, you'll fuck up a Python program if you get the spacing wrong, from what I remember.
That's one of the complaints I have about
Python. That's exactly what we're talking about, Phoneboy, is Sir Bemrose is talking about the fact, like, you know what the fuck this code is supposed to do just because my curly brace is one line down from where your program thinks it should be. Eat my ass and suck my dick.
Yeah, well, of course.
I will append to what I said about Python earlier. One of the biggest things that has kept me from really going whole hog into the language is the fact that, especially having grown up with C, where C does not give a crap if you put any white space in at all. The compiler is just like all white space is ignored, period. Mostly.
Yeah, there's a Python, reason there was an obfuscated C contest for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, obviously, so the idea was that white space is there for the benefit of the programmer. And I'm not saying you should obfuscate your code. It's really cool to turn your code into a mind puzzle, but that's not very productive for something you want to maintain. You do that too much, you end up with Perl. But
well, you know what?
The one complaint that I always had about Python.
No, you motherfucker made that comment for me because you know I would motherfucking laugh.
I knew someone would.
Triggering a Phoneboy. What a low hanging fruit.
Yeah. So I have never particularly liked that Python has significant white space. It's something I sort of get used to. The argument is, your IDE should be handling that. And you want to know what kind of a Luddite I am? I usually don't code with an IDE. I have a command line window for compiling, and I have an editor. And I, over the years have given in to, I'll go ahead and use editors that understand the syntax, but I don't have the ability to type in my editor and hit one button and it compiles and deploys and everything because I don't trust wizards.
Okay, so let me jump
They're
in here
evil,
for a second.
And you taste good with ketchup. Oh, sorry.
I love that. I truly do. I had a bumper sticker that says, do not meddle in the affairs of dragons for your crunchy and taste good with ketchup. And I think that there's some validity to that in what you said. So I don't know if you're aware of this, and it's okay if you're not. I am actually building my own sandbox pen testing environment for my next semester through this amazing book and a Linux program that Damon bought me. But I swear to God, one wrong move and this thing falls like a house of cards. It is so annoying. Phoneboy had to go back, what, like two chapters?
I had to kind of go back to the beginning. Yeah, it was like, something's not working right. Yeah, it was, yes. And of course, so this is VirtualBox, and VirtualBox is owned by Oracle now, and their documentation is absolute shit, and you have to do, it's like, they have this command line interface that's like, anyway, it was... I don't know. I mean, the whole thing was just kind of confusing and not something I have to deal with on a regular basis. But it's like, okay. And I'm looking through some of the stuff and I'm like, They had her do that, but they didn't tell her what to... Anyway, there was...
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of screenshots, and, like, this is how it's supposed to look. This is the syntax. This is what you're supposed to do. But one tiny little keystroke error or one box not checked, like I said, can make this fall like a house of cards. And I'm truly trying to get it done before the beginning of
semester. Welcome
to
programming.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, truly, if I ever wanted a hard mode crash course in what I'm getting into, it's definitely this book on how to create my own VM and sandbox pen testing environment. OMG.
Yeah, no kidding.
Show me a language that just glosses over syntax errors, like, you know, that, like, oh, I, you know, I'm pretty sure you meant to put a semicolon there, JavaScript.
Yeah, I was going to say JavaScript.
So we're just going to insert one, and I will show you a language that is riddled with the hardest to find, most awful bugs that get shipped because the compiler was like, oh, well, we think you meant to do this, which is probably right 94% of the time.
And the rest of it,
you create hard to find bugs.
I was more fussing about the spacing thing that you were mentioning. Yeah. That was why I brought it up, is because the whole spacing thing is so essential to, oh my God, if you do or don't put a space here or there, God forbid it will not. Oh. And
don't
it may
even
or
get
may
me started on text
you.
Editors.
Yeah, it may or may not give you a message saying, hey,
VI
hey problem.
Emacs in the old days. I remember that discussion.
I had to abandon Notepad itself because it was inserting tabs when I wanted spaces.
Well, that doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
No, it screws everything up.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Do you have more on this story, Phone Boy? Because we kind of jumped in.
Yeah, we kind of jumped in. Really, but it's just I think ultimately the issue I had with this story was that it's basically like Microsoft's just trying to put the genie back in the bottle, and you know, never. I don't know if they're going to make it. I don't know if they're going to make it better or worse, but they're going to fuck things up like they always do. And yeah, I mean, yeah. Hey, this is why I still have a job.
They're going to make it. They're going to make it worse in the short term, better in the medium term, and in the long term, you're going to find out that Microsoft is not nearly as good as they want you to trust them to be.
All smoke and mirrors, as we know.
Yes. Well, because all the anyway, so somebody else, I'm sure somebody else has a story.
I want to hear what Rye brought.
Oh, I guess I can go with something slightly related. This one, I don't know how new it is, but I think it's this week. A security flaw in Gigabyte's motherboard's firmware implementations.
Oh, dear God. One of these. Yeah, the unpatchable vulnerabilities.
Yeah, this is, if we go all the way back to 1993 with the 386 Intel architecture, I think is where it started. 93, was it? Anyway, among other things, CPUs gained a mode called system management mode. And this one's not quite as awful as, say, a TPM. And I'll spare you that rant, but
we know TPMs are fucking shitty, but anyway.
TPMs frighten the hell out of me as a user. But anyway, the system management mode actually was designed with good intentions because it's a special mode that is supposed to be only accessible to the BIOS, the UEFI, it is intended, you can only get into it with a special system interrupt that is not even accessible by the kernel itself. It can only be done by hardware, which means it really only triggers on boot most of the time. It's how you get the bootloader going. And the code is actually by the spec for the system management mode, all of the code and all of the memory is firewalled away from everything in both user mode and kernel mode. So the operating system has no access. It's full on sandboxed from this mode. So it's generally been pretty secure, which is probably why, you know, it's been in computing for 30 plus years. However, like I said, the only software that runs in this mode is the firmware, the bootloader, the BIOS,
Or UEFI or whatever the fuck they call it now.
Yeah. UEFI. Isn't UEFI a bootloader? I don't remember. Or no. Anyway, it's all of the firmware stuff, which it generally, you know, way back in the day when this mode was being defined, was stored in ROM chips on the motherboard, which meant that you had to get it right or you had to scrap an entire line of motherboards because there was no changing it after it was read-only. But nowadays, of course, all of that is just software on a chip somewhere that can be fixed, can be updated, whatever. And, you know, it still works perfectly fine unless there's a bug, a security bug that lets, I don't know, some security or some vulnerability that, you know, some malware can poke memory into this thing that then loads on the next boot. And then suddenly malware can run anything they want before the operating system does anything at all. That is what we call an unpatchable vulnerability. Doesn't matter the operating system. Doesn't, you know, basically, if malware gets a hold of this vulnerability, you throw the motherboard away. That's really the only safe thing to do at that
point. It's a nuke it from orbit situation.
your hardware is done because the moment that the Gigabyte has actually, and I'll skip to the end. Gigabyte has already released firmware updates that quote unquote resolve the issue. And okay, that's fine. But two problems I see with that. One is, first of all, who the hell installs firmware updates for their motherboard? Most people will take whatever firmware is on the motherboard and for the life cycle of that hardware, we'll just keep using it because who the hell thinks about it?
Yeah, unless it's pushed by some corporate managed IT or some bullshit like that. Yeah, most people will just leave it and let it run until it basically will refuse to let them do anything until they accept the Lord Jesus Christ in their life or the next update from Tom Collins
or Satya
Nadella or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. I had something to say there. What? Okay.
Nothing. Oh.
Oh.
I think we lost Rye for a moment.
Did we lose you?
Did I mute?
You kind of glipped. You like left and came back, it looked like.
Okay, that is officially weird because I hadn't touched anything
I don't
know because I didn't see exactly what it said and then it said connected.
Would you like to know what happened on my end? I did. I don't know how much of it you heard. I did my entire talk on the firmware, the whole thing,
that.
And I know you heard it, but then. I hadn't even touched the mouse or anything, and I look over, and CleanFeed suddenly says I'm muted.
Oh dear God!
we actually didn't get to hear it.
It's kind of See, this is my spirit going around and touching mute buttons when it doesn't need to.
Did you somehow manage to click my mute button?
Yeah, just all I can say is
game over, man. It's game over.
Oh my God!
What the fuck are we gonna do?
Okay,
now?
So
what are we gonna do?
Yeah,
anyway, nobody installs firmware updates for their motherboard, and that's one thing that concerns me. But the other thing that concerns me greatly with this is, from a straight security vulnerability theory perspective, the code that loads new firmware is in the firmware. And what that means is that if malware has run once, then who's to say that the code that would, you can't patch it because the code that loads new firmware could be compromised. And for all you know, it's like the compiler exploit from way back when where they made it so that the C compiler, every time it was compiling a program, it injected this malware in. And every time if it detected it was compiling the compiler, it made sure to inject the code that would add the vulnerability to all the software.
That's actually brilliant. That's actually brilliant and nefarious all at once.
Yeah. I don't remember the details of it, but I mean, that was from way back in 80s or 90s. It somebody injected a malicious compiler that when it was asked to compile the compiler would inject the malicious code back in so that changing the source code would never fix it.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's pretty rough.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's the same thing
that
here.
Other than nuke for more.
If this vulnerability, the description in the article was improper validation of buffers, which allowed our attackers to execute arbitrary code before the operating system loads, in all gigabyte firmware prior to, I guess, this week. Anyway, yeah, if you get, this is a bad vulnerability. And when I say bad, I mean, if you get hacked in any way, there is no fix. there is, you can't trust the thing that would fix it. You can't put new firmware on, because if I'm writing malware for this thing, the first thing I would do is a module that says, oh, you're asking me to install new firmware. Well, okay, let's go ahead and install all the things that I don't care about and make sure that the backdoor is still there.
Exactly.
Well, so yeah, of course, then there's the malware that the vendors themselves leave on there. Oh, wait a minute, that's the Windows installs.
But wait.
So it frightened me.
That, you know what? That actually leads perfectly into one of the things I've got. Because Asus has done fucked up from the floor up. Because their Armory Crate app, it comes pre-installed on like their gaming desktops and their laptops and shit. And it's got a really bad flaw that can give the hackers full Windows admin rights. Yeah, it's an 8.8 out of a 10 on the CVE scale, which is sexy as fuck. So the gist of it is that the relied on hardware coded security verification for its apps, yeah, it doesn't do anything. They can exploit this vulnerability to leapfrog into full low-level system access, which then can be used to completely pwn your system. It's a bad fucking situation. Bad fucking day, my man. And this is coming right out of the factory. Like, shipped to you, vulnerability right there, waiting to be exploited. It is unreal. When I found this story...
It's efficient.
It's efficient, but
it's
also
cutting out
gross.
The middleman. You don't even need to go through all of the effort of installing malware.
No, it's already there. Like, ta-da!
It's like Windows. You've already got it full of malware.
Pretty much. Fuck Windows.
Oh, my goodness. So this is, this is the problem. How do we trust our stuff if it comes out of the factory with a shit? I mean,
the problem is you can't.
I don't know about you, but I'm using hardware from 2014.
Yeah, I wish I was. Unfortunately, I left all of that back on Wisteria Lane. But
no, I have to agree with you, Dame. How the fuck can you trust it if it's coming out of the factory as infected as a fucking Chinese hooker? Like, what the fuck?
Infected as a Chinese hooker? I need to write that down.
It's scary because you have a lot of gamers like Dame Bemrose, who, granted, she's smarter than that. But some of these, you know, gamers who are just like, oh, I went on Amazon and bought this great gaming system from Asus, and they know jack shit about the fact that, like, one tiny little code injection and you're pwned, dude. It's over. I don't get how you can roll that out from the factory and just be okay with it.
Like with everything, the absolute biggest security vulnerability in pretty much any system is the meatware. It's how you said, how do you fix it? You take a big step back and literally fuck your own face.
I love this. Bemlet says, I'm starting to think Asus's motto is something like, we're going to make the best hardware for gamers and hackers, but for gamers. That's literally what this is. Like, so thank you, dude, because you're not wrong, bro.
So, you know, what's the solution? I mean, a comprehensive solution requires cultural change. And I say cultural change in the halls of vendors, which is, by the way, an entire career in this field suggests to me that this is extremely difficult and possibly not possible. But the vendors need to start focusing on security. And as you brought up about 15 minutes ago, the only way that happens is if users start caring about security, and
but we know
for
the
that
user
the
is
short-term
dumb as a
solution
box of rocks.
The short-term solution is caveat emptor, and you know, how do you get people to care about security? Well, the one very valuable step might be to ship a bunch of motherboards that come pre-owned.
I mean, yeah.
It's funny because it's kind of a negative reinforcement cycle, but if nothing's wrong, people don't care about security. As you pointed out at the very beginning of the show, people care about security when things go wrong. So how do you get people to care?
Everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth.
Exactly. But how do you get people to care more about security? Well, things have to go wrong. So maybe the solution to changing the culture, to making software and hardware vendors actually test their shit, is for users to start demanding they test their shit. And the only way that happens is users get hacked a lot more often.
But I have
And I don't know if that's the solution we want.
If I want security.
I mean, that's a brutal solution because it requires a lot of people to get hacked. And maybe that's not the direction we want to go. You know,
it's not the direction we want to go, but it's the fuck around and find out route that people seem to want to take. They don't want to think about, hey, maybe I should make sure that there's not a Chinese backdoor in my technology before I give it access to everything on my network.
The other solution is precisely what we have right now, which is the people who are skeptical about the trust level in their gear. And the people who pay attention to stories and CVE databases and podcasts and the people who, you know, or the people who know somebody who pays a lot of attention, you know, the people who don't blindly install stuff are going to be relatively safe. And the people who don't are going to get hacked over and over again. And you know, at some point, the balance between those two may or may not get someone's attention. And I mean, the situation we have right now is, you know, I'm not going to get hacked by brand new hardware because I don't buy brand new hardware. Or if I do, I'm going to research it. Somebody who goes out and is like, well, I found on Woot there was this, gaming motherboard for $10 and I bought it and installed it immediately. Well, okay, you know what? You're rolling the dice.
Pretty much anymore, it seems like it. I mean, we talk about this with the routers and stuff like that. I mean, I had a whole fucking rant this week about, adding another fucking, one of these mesh Wi-Fi systems and, the fact that...
Required because our internet connection, despite the location of our routers, was abject shit.
Yes, we had a couple... So anyway, but just, Joe, my God, like...
Let me assure you, in a three-story condo, a mesh network is about as useless as tits on a horse.
Well, or at least,
without
well,
four WAPs.
Yeah, or at least three. We had at least three, but now we have... Now
my
we have
place about, is... What, three?
Yeah.
Now my place is three stories, and I'm quite happy with my wired network running through the walls.
Yeah, well, I wish...
we owned this place, I can assure you there would be at least Cat 6 running
through the
fucking
walls. Or if you knew
walls.
How to use a spackle and putty.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Again, you cannot imagine how thin these walls are. This is like the plasterboard palace.
Yeah.
This is the most fucking Disneyland construction I've ever seen.
And I understand that you're, under a regime that likes its rules, but I'm also unsympathetic because fuck rules.
Yeah, fuck rules and the fact you own your house, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's falling apart around me because I'm not great at maintenance, but.
Yeah, but at least you can call it yours. Like, no motherfucker can sit there in an HOA and tell you, like, oh, you did this or you did that. We're going to fine you, blah, blah, blah. Like,
even
I
when I was.
Get out of here.
Even when I was buying my house 20 years ago, that was absolutely a requirement. I was like, to my realtor, I'm like, don't even show me houses that have an HOA because that's a non-starter. It's not going to happen.
Hugely.
Yeah.
Yeah. There will never be the acronym HOA in our future once we get the hell out of here. It is unreal.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Phone Boy, what did you bring for your second helping of tech trash?
Oh, dear God. I have lots of things that I'm deciding what I want to do. Well, okay, let's actually talk about this one.
Too many choices is a bad thing.
Yeah, sometimes too many, but I think this one's a good one. So this was a story. Go ahead.
Throw a dart at the list of AI stories.
No, this is not an AI story.
We actually tried real hard, Ryan, not to bring in the AI stories this week because we know.
Oh, I didn't.
They trigger you.
Yeah. Well, I do have an AI. Yeah, I mean, I have an AI story about here's what your brain looks like on ChatGPT, which is basically what you would think is it. Yeah, because they figured out that, yeah, your brain's not as activated when you have ChatGPT do things.
Yeah, it's like that flatline EKG.
Exactly.
Fumboy, we actually, in all seriousness and not to make a shameless plug, but I'm going to anyway, we did a story like this on Lotus Effect, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central on Saturdays. Join us. No, seriously, though, we actually did an article on this. Do you remember the people who, there was like 40 participants?
Yeah, exactly.
They had some of them literally use ChatGPT to do all of their stuff, and they couldn't even write a sentence after that.
Yeah, that's exactly that. Yeah, it's kind of like what happens to your ability to navigate when you use GPS.
This is brain rot, people.
It's brain rot. But I wasn't going to cover that. I wanted to talk about this. Okay, so
well, talk about something, for God's sake.
Okay,
we're getting bored.
Okay,
yeah, shut up and let him.
Breaking the balls.
Okay, so this dude.
Bullshit.
Fuck you.
We can do this all night long.
Yes, I know. Okay, so. So one of the things that you never want to do in a public code repository is a
public
GitHub.
Code suppository.
A public code suppository.
Write it down.
Yeah, exactly. Public.
See, this is why we do this show with him. It's not just for the intelligent tech talk. It's also about the shitty show titles that he barfs out.
The public code, was it public code suppository? Is that what this is? I don't know. Fucking,
all right. Like I said before, rails. What rails? Where the fuck were the rails? I think we snorted them.
So anyway, if you're using GitHub to store your code, that means anybody in the world can see it. Well, okay. So what happens if you do something like, commit a credential necessary to access some backend service that has, admin privileges, and you realize you make the mistake and you go, oh yeah, let's go remove that from the code repository.
No. Hey, did you also have password of 123456?
It's even worse.
Is the wrong solution. Just for the record, that is the wrong solution. There is no removing from the public. Like, people do not get this. Everybody on, especially people on social media, do not understand something that we learned very, very early on in the internet, which is if you put something out publicly, there's no take backs. Social media puts up a button that has the word delete on it and makes people think, oh, you've got this false sense of I can erase it from the internet. Nope, because if anybody's seen it, they can have archived it already, and there's no deleting.
And it's been deleted by 33 times.
Well, that's exactly it. Anything you put on the internet, just automatically assume it's out there forever, ever, ever.
And you have to assume, and again, this is from a threat model perspective, if it goes out once publicly ever, you have to assume it's there forever. There is no take backs. So I don't want to be jumping to the end of your story, but I might be because I'm just predicting here. The solution, if you accidentally commit your credentials, which does happen, you shouldn't be. You should be reviewing your damn commits, but it does happen, is, okay, well, I guess it's time to change those credentials now because the original ones can never be used again.
Yes, because, and I'll tell you why. Because, even if you remove them from the code, guess what? It's in the change logs because that's what GitHub does, right? Is it tracks every change. So all you got to do is go back through the change logs and there's your password. So, yeah, you need to change your fucking admin credentials, you dumbass.
Yeah. Well, like I was saying, someone has archived it. Well, the nature of source control is that everything that has ever been in the repository is archived so that people can go and look through. That's actually a feature of source control like Git. Yeah, you can't just change it and be like, oh, it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. You can't do that.
But I
think the story, they're like, they're trying to get Microsoft to change it. Like, why don't you just change the fucking credential? Like,
yeah, that's what you have to do. And let me just say, yes, Git archives everything you've ever put in. So obviously, that's dumb thinking you can delete it by changing. But, and this is something that I didn't actually cover on Angry Tech News because I didn't do a show that week, believe it or not. But I remember doing research and came across a story like months ago about a bot that was just going through and subscribing to every GitHub repository it could find, watching all change logs and archiving things that, you know, even just because what they were trying to do was check for censorship. They were trying to check, okay, did somebody stick their finger in the GitHub database and actually erase something? Yes, they can do that. Yes, it does happen. Also, deleted repositories, no longer accessible. There are bots out there that will archive all of that stuff, even if you can manage to get rid of it on GitHub, which is not what you can do by default.
Because there's always somebody who has a backup recording.
Yeah. Unless you need them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah like on the pilot episode.
Exactly.
But that's the problem. People, even at this point of the internet, still don't understand that once it's out there, someone has a copy, you cannot get rid of it. It's out there for eternity.
And to be absolutely precise, you cannot rely on someone having a copy, obviously, as we learned, for example, with the pilot episode.
As we learned.
But you also cannot assume that nobody has a copy. You
well,
don't
that's
know.
Where a lot of people make the mistake.
It is, like, as they say in programming parlance, undefined behavior.
And it could also, you know, in certain circumstances, it probably could garner some good blackmail.
Yeah, you never know.
That might also be why people are running bots against GitHub.
Well, I mean, it's...
Well, that and the train.
I mean, come on, when we have a government who uses fucking signals to communicate about war plans, would we be any kind of surprised if some kind of high-ranking official was using GitHub for communications?
Did I ever tell you why I created a second GitHub account?
I'd love to hear it.
The story's not that long. I had my original GitHub account for a very long time and had put up a bunch of code. Now, some of the code was like the chapters app for podcasting, the podcast 2.0 stuff. But a lot of my code was just Minecraft mods because I was playing a lot of Minecraft back then. I had maybe 25 public repositories, most of which were crap that nobody would ever bother looking for. I don't know what exactly triggered this, but Microsoft came out maybe 4 years ago and said, we notice that you have repositories that significant portions of the internet rely upon. And therefore, we did a security audit of your account and you must change your password to something stronger. I'm like, well, okay, if you're hashing it, you don't know how strong my password is, but thanks for verifying that you store it in plain text, assholes.
I know, right?
And they said you have to set up two-factor authentication with a Microsoft Authenticator or a phone number. Because they determined that I was hosting some critical infrastructure for the code. And I looked at this and I'm like, no, you're not getting my phone number.
Yeah, like, and blow me unless you can prove what you think.
I'm uncomfortable with you scanning my password after the fact.
Yep.
And, I don't believe that I'm hosting anything that is important enough to need two-factor authentication. So at some point, you know, they harassed me by email for about 4 months and then eventually said, okay, you can't log into GitHub anymore until you change your password and set up two-factor authentication. And I never logged into GitHub again.
I was going to say, and to this day, you have not re-logged into GitHub.
Yeah. I mean, if I need any of that code, the repositories are public. I just...
Yeah, I just recently got an email about how, because it's been like, this is what's funny. It's been better than 12 months since you've logged in. No, bitch, it's better than like, 76 months or so since I've logged into
the phrase better than 12 months. Like, yeah, it is really nice that you haven't logged in all this time.
I mean, I stopped being an Android person when Phoneboy and I got together like 3.5 years ago, and just now you're like, oh, it's been better than 12 months. Like, nah, dude, you're a little behind. Yeah. And no,
it's been a pretty damn nice 12 months, but yeah, it's even better than that.
I'm pretty sure that the fucks I have to give about any information or data I might have on Samsung right now, there's really nothing. Delete it all. Have fun. Go for it. The thing that's grinding my gears the most, and I talked about it on Lotus Effect, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central on Saturdays. Sorry, I can't help it.
Bullshit.
The thing that grinds my gears the most, in all seriousness, is the fact that when I paid $100 to join my honor society for school, they sold my fucking email to every college from here to Timbuktu. Like, no, I bleed orange. Go Vols. I do not want to attend the University of goddamn Alabama, nor do I have any inclination to want to attend college in New York at like Lake Champlain University or some shit. I am so furious. I'm about to contact my advisor, who's also the person who runs the tech program that I'm in, and just be like, so whose ass do I have to climb up and set up camp in for having done this? This is unacceptable.
Yes, this is definitely.
I don't need to have to continue to open my emails and click the unsubscribe link just to tell you I have no interest in your school. Have a nice day, drive through.
You want a really cool pro tip? You don't have to continue opening your emails.
Well, yes, I understand that. But what I'm trying to do, because you know as well as I do, that if you don't go in and say, hey, you know, go away.
Yeah, there's a whining noise out of some people when you don't communicate with them.
No, I'm just saying I'm tired of my email box being completely flooded with.
And this is the only inbox it is. And it's the scary thing is it's just your school account. It's like, you've just spammed my school account.
No, that's the thing. It isn't my school account. If it was my school account, I wouldn't care. This is my primary account that I use for business purposes that I'm getting spammed on. I want to find the person responsible for this and have a conversation with their feet not touching the floor. I don't like spam. I've unsubscribed from 90% of the crap that I had coming into my inbox.
Right. Okay, where's
and now I literally paid to be spammed. What is that?
Yes, I get no spam. I don't know.
Anyway. JCD for the win, but seriously. So bring us something else that lights our brains on fire here, Rye.
Okay. Did you know, for the first time ever, that it is the year of Linux on the desktop?
I'm intrigued.
They've been saying that since, I don't know, the first time I played with Linux in like 1994, but go on.
Yeah, I want to say it was 93 for me was the first time that I had somebody come up and be like, here's a CD with, or it might've been floppies. Like here's Linux. Have you tried it? It's, you know, any time now there, it's going to be the year of Linux on the desktop. That's kind of a joke amongst the Linux community is that every year there's like, oh, it's doing really well. It's going to be the year of Linux on the desktop.
You know, what's funny though, is since discovering Linux, I don't want to run any other operating system. I find it to be one of the most easiest, especially on the command line. I just like it. I can understand why it's a preferred language or operating system, not language.
There you are, thinking Linux is a language again.
Dude, I'm like four buzzballs in. Get fucked. Like, seriously, I know it's an operating system, and
I would have caught
up,
but I had to do a podcast.
That's no excuse.
Yeah, where's your sense of adventure,
yeah,
Sir Bemrose?
You do realize some of us do actually still listen to ATN when you put it out.
But buzzballs? You mean those ones that are made with vagina squeezins? Yes.
Yeah, the things you drink when you hate yourself epically and want to erase your mind.
Yeah, but you don't have to admit it. Anyway.
Why? I don't lie to our listeners.
According to some market share researcher who's I didn't write down because they're kind of all the same. They're not, but I just don't care. According to this TechSpot article, June 2025, for the first time ever, the market share for Linux on, quote, U.S. desktops is over 5%, 5.03% in June of 2025. Also the first month that Linux was higher than the category unknown operating system.
Yeah, well, the question is, what is an unknown? Anyway, I mean...
Well, honestly, I think because this information, it was pulled from mostly from things like user agents in web hits.
We know that's reliable.
It is. It's totally... it's the most reliable thing we have, which isn't, but that's fine. And... You know, so that unknown could mean web hits from people who sanitize their user agents. Linux has absolutely always been underreported because it has a much higher share of the kind of people who will put add-ons into their browser that says, how about you don't give them every piece of information about me? You know, how about you don't digitize my firstborn child and send it to every website? You know, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. The kind of people that would listen to 2.5 Bens,
But the reason that I mentioned this, because these kind of statistics generally don't interest me, though, it was because the reasons why at least TechSpot was speculating as to why Linux is surging in popularity. 5.03%. Yeah, that's barely above 5%, but sure, it's a milestone.
Yeah, but as an operating system, it sucks. The
quote from TechSpot was, Linux's momentum is largely driven by user dissatisfaction with Microsoft's ecosystem.
Duh.
And I think that absolutely nails it.
It does. It absolutely says exactly what we all are thinking, is when you put those two operating systems up against each other, there's no competition.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's like, it seems like, okay, Windows 11, right? We can talk about it. Windows 11 wants you to have, like, modern hardware, and you can do all this shit to sort of fake it out or whatever and get it to install, but I'm like, I don't want to fucking play that game, right?
They call out two problems with Windows 11, one of which I call out every single time every time Windows 11 leave my lips, I have to spit. But the reason is, in shitification of the operating system, they have put ads into everything that you look at. Every single thing that you see on the operating system, the start menu, all of the apps, the programs, Notepad has an ad bar now. That alone would have driven me away if Microsoft hadn't already done that with me. But the other reason, which I think is probably a bigger one for the kind of people who are okay with watching a YouTube video that's 74% ads by time, the thing that's driving them away is, you get to a point where your shit works, and then forced updates are saying, well, you have to move to the new operating system. And if you don't move to the new operating system, then you're a bad person who, and they'll give you all kinds of stuff like, oh, your security is destroyed if you don't move. And you take all that messaging of people have been conditioned that you have to be on the new operating system or your computer will spontaneously explode into flames or something.
Combined with, if you're browsing the web, on the modern web, and you're not getting modern updates, yeah, that could be, that could actually happen.
There's a long discussion on that, and we had part of it in the last show, and I'm not really willing to continue that right now. But Microsoft took the step in combination with the messaging that you always have to have the new operating system or you're screwed. Microsoft also took the step that says, oh, yeah, and all of that 5-year-old hardware that you've been using, yeah, you can't use that. You have to throw it away. You have to upgrade. You have to go buy a brand new computer or you can't get the latest thing. And it's causing cognitive dissonance in a lot of people who are saying, well, then maybe I don't need the newest thing. Maybe I don't need Windows 11. And then Windows 10 pops up these things like, you're not secure because you're not on Windows 11 anymore. And they're like, well, okay, so I can't move this hardware to 11. And now 10 is saying it doesn't work or it's going out of service or... what else is there other than Windows?
Yeah, exactly.
It's causing Microsoft to lose their grip on people because they're squeezing and shaking too hard.
Beef stroganoff.
Because fuck Windows.
That's what I meant to say. What the hell? No, yeah. I hit the wrong fucking clip because my finger had a Tourette's fit and hit the one underneath what I was trying to do.
She's wanting my beef, but that's the after party.
Jesus Christ!
These are lies.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the fuck is with you, but, like, seriously, no. That had nothing to do with it. I just simply hit the wrong clip, but your delusion of grandeur, great.
I broke Phoenix.
You can suck my dick.
Well, the way I look at it...
Or could it be her massive stripper titties?
Okay, the show is going downhill.
No, but...
going?
So, right. I brought something in that I thought would truly appease Sir Bramrose, since I have found the fact that I like bringing in two as well. Not that this is going to surprise anyone, but apparently there's a huge security breach that affected 16 billion logins, including Apple IDs. And this article is so gross. It's like, oh, to protect yourself from malware, avoid downloading software from repositories like GitHub. Duh. I shit you not. It literally said that. I know this would trigger you.
In order to avoid malware, don't download from sketchy repositories like Google Play.
Well, I mean, it's so funny because it's like, oh, if you insist like on using cracked hardware, you'll always risk malware exposure. Duh!
No, of course, but of course, again, it's pre-installed, then, you know, then you don't need to do this stuff.
Well, what got me, because, of course, like I said, the headline being, you know, oh, shocking security breach of 16 billion logins, including Apple IDs. Dude, this article read like a native ad for article and its many overpriced services, as well as a basic cybersecurity for dummies checklist. It was ridiculous.
Kind of SEO crap they've been writing for 20 plus years.
Well, I mean, it's really fucking simple. If you don't...
Clickbait?
Pretty much. If you don't trust where you're downloading...
If you don't trust the pussy, why are you fucking the pussy?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you don't trust where you're downloading the content from, why the fuck are you downloading it? Are you dumb? I mean, we know end users as a species are usually dumb.
What I know is that one of the biggest problems with end users as a species is that they are tremendously bad at deciding who to trust.
And no, you're not wrong.
Silicon Valley companies do not help.
Does that surprise you, though?
No. No, it's human nature.
I mean, it's much like people trusting the government, but hey, that's another show entirely.
That might be why computing needs more caveat emptor.
People have to pay attention to the caveat emptor.
App stores did a massive disservice to you by making it easy to just say, oh, I want this thing. I want a fart app. Let me just click and install and it's perfectly fine. App stores have completely changed the culture that people are like, well, I guess I'll just install this and go. Yeah, I don't know. I have nostalgia, and it's probably unwarranted for the time back when if you wanted a new piece of software, you had to go out onto a BBS and look for shareware postings, and you might find what you need. And actually, it was a link to a source repository, which was usually a zip file you had to download that you could unpack, and it was the source code. And then you had to build your own software and your own. Okay, I'm dating myself, but let me date myself a little bit more. Is anybody here old enough to remember when, if you wanted new software, you had to go out and buy a paper magazine and type those codes in?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Have you applied for Medicare yet?
No, so David All's basic computer games. I can't tell you how many fucking things I typed out of those damn books.
Well, here's what's funny about what Rye just said about the whole going to this and that repository and whatnot. In this disgusting article, it literally was like, oh, Apple has vetted all of the apps that are on the Apple Store. Like, I truly pulled this story literally just to trigger you for the fact that I might even send you the link because it was truly just such a native ad for, look how great Apple is and how shitty everyone else is, except for, oh, we forgot the fact that a bunch of fucking Apple IDs got hacked too. Oopsie.
I mean, Apple's not great. Next story.
Well, no, but if you listen to all the hype that they put out, like, oh, we're the most secure and we're this and we're that. And this is coming from someone who is a member of the Tom Collins fucking cult.
And that's one of the reasons why
I'm literally shitting on my own crew here, saying Apple touts how secure they are, yet, oh, gee, how come all of your Apple IDs, like I said, 16 billion, including those, got fucking hacked? And what... what made me laugh is that this article talked about how, oh, it was probably from all of these, like, different, basically the only way this is happening is through malware. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. Apple touts being so secure and the fact that, you know, you really can't be hacked. Well, apparently you can.
Yeah,
and this is how.
Yeah, and you know, if you weren't getting hacked, companies like the one I work for wouldn't have products that actually try to protect that kind of shit, you know, from happening on your system.
One of the reasons why I don't wade into the sycophocracy that is Apple coverage is Apple is they are a very competent company who puts out a product that their philosophy, which is one that I disagree with fundamentally, is if we control as much of the experience as possible, then we can reduce the number of places where, you know, bugs or user confusion or security vulnerabilities seep in. They're not wrong about that.
Yeah, but they're not. If all of these logins, including the IDs, are being exposed because of the fact that there's a bunch of data harvesting going on, which frankly is going on everywhere.
But they could have also gotten that from, you know, there's,
the article didn't expressly say, like, hey, this was the freshest data. And like I said, some of the stuff that I pulled this week was like, this is the most basic fucking advice ever. Oh, change your passwords. Oh, implement two-factor authentication. Or I always call it authentication. It's authentication. I'm sorry. It's my word. Fuck y'all. But seriously, it just feels like, are you kidding me? This is the same rhetoric we keep hearing from these companies. Why don't y'all try a little harder? Because you know, at the end of the day, end users are dumb.
Yeah, exactly. The end user, it's just, I can't even believe this.
Apple has always had a philosophy, you know, and this diverges from early Microsoft, but not so much from modern Microsoft. Apple has always had the philosophy that the best way to keep malware from running on their platforms is to don't allow anything we didn't write to run on the platforms. And that's why, for example,
it's not a bad theory, but how many end users are going to be like, oh, this wasn't sanctioned, let me not download it.
There's a pendulum between the user control and the ability of the company to make guarantees about what kind of experience you're going to have. And Apple is very much far on one end of that spectrum. And I value user control a lot, which is why Apple is not for me. And one of the reasons why I complain about them a lot.
Yeah, but are you willing to trade the user control for the safety?
Well, he's also, look who I'm saying this to,
a man who keeps his cell phone in a drawer.
No. Those who would trade freedom for safety deserve neither.
Yeah, fair enough. But this also kind of wades into the topic of the app store thing. And there's this whole EU has sort of forced Apple to have third party app stores. Now, see, this is not new because I used to work at Nokia. Right. And now, granted, I was doing cybersecurity, not doing phones, but needless to say, I was really interested in 2005 and 2006, I was certainly interested in the smartphones that they had. And so, you know, you could run all these applications, and then you could run ones that weren't signed by fucking Nokia or Symbian or whoever it was doing it back in the day. You got the warning and said, hey, we didn't verify this. This could be something, and you make the decision for yourself as to whether you allow it or not. Apple could easily do the same fucking thing because it's all fucking certificates anyway, right? So
Okay, but here's where just the side-loading. Problem. But here's where the problem comes in. You have end users who are going to sit there and cry and bitch about the fact that, oh, I got hacked, this and that, even though there is this binding, you know, warning in arbitration if you do this, then this could be the outcome, and yeah, we take no responsibility.
If the users win in eyes open, then fuck them. The problem is the users who didn't know what the hell they were doing. They were just, I want to do this thing on my phone and Apple won't let me. So let me look on the internet. And oh, look, here's a YouTube video that shows me exactly what buttons to click to disable all security on my device so that I can install this fart app.
Right. And then when it goes all tits up, they want to cry and be like, oh, I wasn't protected. Fuck Apple. Da 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 da. Like,
yeah.
No, dude, you need to take some accountability. Yeah,
okay. So I have actually
FAFO, I'm fine with this.
Yeah. I actually ran into this problem in the early days of the iPhone because I had it. I think the first one I got was the 3GS. This was probably 2009, 2010, something like that. Anyway, but I had jailbroken the thing, and it was done through some sort of low-level boot, some sort of low-level thing that actually fucked it up, so I couldn't do an update for a while until it eventually got fixed. But yeah, I mean,
An awesome feature. I like it.
Yeah, I was fucking around and finding out, and that's, you know, but I also knew that, right? And that's, you know, most people when they do all this stuff, yeah, they don't know what they're getting into. And it's they make these nice little programs that make it really easy to do certain things, and then all of a sudden then you realize it goes sideways. And or wait a minute, that was just trying to add a router to my the thing to my network.
I think the problem is that there's a lot of programs that add convenient one-click buttons that say, I know what I'm doing. And by clicking that, the programmer and the developer and the software washes their hands of all responsibility, which is a rational thing to do. But there's no verification behind the button. There's no way to know that the user was telling the truth when they clicked, I know what I'm doing.
Well, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Well, yes, and of course, they don't actually know what they're doing. They're just, they think they know what they're doing. Yeah. You know, this is what they say.
Or they don't know what they're doing, and they realize they don't know what they're doing. But the way that the software was written was you have to click that button in order to proceed to view the dancing monkeys or whatever the hell you want to do. And the YouTube video that shows the walkthrough, because let's face it, developers who write software do a piss poor job of explaining how to use it.
The sad part is you just use the term, the video that describes, or the YouTube video that explains how. Just let that soak in for a minute. That's what we've become, is the way to find out how to do something is literally log on to YouTube and find a video.
Because we used to beat our heads against our fucking keyboards.
Well, no, seriously, that's not a joke. I used to read 400-page
programming manuals from cover to cover to learn how to use it.
Or buy a Writely book or some shit like that.
Tony told us about that, Rye. Like, we heard about the two fucking gigantic books, binders, whatever, from your neighbor. Like, kudos, bro.
Oh, yeah, that was,
you read those.
That was how I got started.
Yeah, that's what he said was, like, that was your first kind of introduction to, like, you had a neighbor, blah blah, IBM, blah blah, big ass things, you read them cover to cover.
My first printer that had a 90 page manual that listed all of the technical specs necessary to write what we would now know as a printer driver.
Because back in those days, you didn't have a printer driver ever. Anyway,
no.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Software had to send these bytecodes to the printer in order to print.
So time out, you two graybeards. I saw something today I never thought I would saw. But I saw it. I actually saw someone at this tomato festival we went to selling 3D printer items. No joke.
3D printed tomatoes?
They weren't tomatoes, sadly. They were like lizards, dragons.
Yes. So, yeah, we...
Okay, would you eat a tomato that was 3D printed?
If it tasted like a Granger County,
the Granger County.
Of course it is.
This is okay. I am not a tomato person, but holy crap, these Granger County tomatoes are really great. I mean, this is
food that comes from manufacturing plants can taste really good.
Well, I mean, but I think that's what it is. It's local.
Yeah.
The farmer we talked to right before we left, like the guy literally by the crow flies, was not a couple of miles to his farm.
Yeah.
you know, this is not some hot house bullshit that they're selling at this festival. This is stuff they grew in this, you know, as he described it, volcanic soil that's ideal for growing these tomatoes. It's why they taste the way they do. And they are arguably world famous. They're amazing.
Volcanic soil.
Yeah. I don't know how that works in East Tennessee. No, I get it. Dude, I get it. Like, I don't like think the nearest, we have any volcanoes here, but I
think the nearest volcano to Tennessee is in Colorado.
You're not wrong. Like, I don't know why he described it like that. Like, maybe,
I mean, I've probably got something? Volcanic soil around here.
Well, yeah, you probably do. You know, at least
from my house, I can see two volcanoes.
Yes, exactly. Well, you're just waiting for them to blow. And I would assume any mountain was a volcano at some point. It's just now dormant.
No,
but
this isn't a geology podcast.
No, this is not a geology podcast.
Yeah, exactly. However, like, I love volcanoes.
Yeah, if you want to hear the geography song or the geology song, we also have
The one about Cleveland rocks?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that one. Yeah,
yeah, those ones.
Yeah, exactly. So...
I bet they're not volcanic either.
No, they're probably not. I don't know. We might play that in the after show.
And we probably will, because I think at this point, have you exhausted all your stories, sir?
Let me see. Okay, this is actually... Okay, so this
ooh,
is...
Actually...
Look, we got more.
I could... Okay, so a British IT worker was sentenced to 7 months after trashing the company network. I don't know what you say about this. Yeah, when you fire the dude named Ben, go change all the passwords.
I'm sorry, that's cybersecurity 101.
Oh, these stories are always great.
Yes. Oh, my. Yes.
Yeah, but this I've heard this story before a dozen times. The specifics are different. The company is different, but it happens all the time.
Every fucking time. Like, nobody thinks about the fact when you fire the IT guy, somebody needs to be smart enough to block the account.
Oh, my God.
The account, change the password.
When I gave my 2 weeks at the corporation, my manager was like, okay, have you... checked everything in before he was like, I got to stop you before you actually say the words. Have you checked everything in? Have you made sure that all your stuff is, you know, make sure everything on your computer. And because we knew the moment I said, yeah, I'm giving my 2 weeks, security came and literally escorted me out of the building. They're like, you're done.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we knew it. So it's like, finish
like
everything.
Microsoft is not going to take that chance that a dude named Ben is fixing to scramble the
red. Yeah, this is probably
you continue getting paid for 2 weeks, but they're like, no, you're not coming in.
They actually, when you think about it, both you and Rye probably would agree with this, Bay, that if you give your 2 weeks, if you get fired, whatever. That company knows it's going to cost them a lot less money, especially if you're a very intelligent IT guy, to just pay you for that 2 weeks to fuck off.
Yeah, well,
for you to come in and scramble their eggs, like I said.
Yeah, well, I mean, this also because the industry I'm in, there's competitors, right? And so, and sometimes people that work for us go work for a competitor. Yeah, when that happens, that's an immediate termination. And then some, you know, if the guy's retiring or something, it might, you know, they may not terminate him immediately. But yeah, it depends on the circumstances because it is something that they ask. And yeah, and usually, and that happens, you can just expect to be, you know, yeah, you can expect to be terminated. That's just the way it goes.
So. But see, that actually seems, in my opinion, to be kind of shitty. That's really saying like, hey, we don't trust you because you've decided to excel your career in a different direction. We don't trust you, so we're just going to pay you for 2 weeks to fuck off and not potentially expose all of our deep dark secrets, despite the fact you signed an NDA.
I'm not even sure it's specifically about trust because, you know, among other things, they had no reason to think that I was going to fuck with the company when I left. It was just straight company policy. And if you really analyze it's rational.
It's not individual. It's truly just blanket. We trust no one. Fuck you. Have a nice day.
I mean, I never gave them any reason to think that I was going to fuck with the company
because
I wouldn't
matter.
Want to telegraph my intentions.
Yeah, but like if you've paid any attention to the M5M and the shit that they like to highlight, it's always the people who are quiet and say nothing that fucking come in on their last day and open fire with an AK-47.
Say the words. He was quiet and kept to himself.
Exactly. That's what you hear most often. So, yeah, I can understand them being
And what you don't hear on the M5M is also he was hepped up on Ritalin 24/7.
We don't ever talk about
what SSRIs.
All the sugar and seed oils and everything else that all the other garbage that's in our food. Yeah, but you can we talk about that on the Lotus Effect. But anyway,
The only other thing I have, which we probably don't need, but I in my notes this is listed as stupid article about somebody getting ChatGPT to reveal Windows product keys.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that story. That's fucking funny. Hilarious.
I'm going to be honest. No more needs to be said than what I just said. Right. But we'll shit on it
and Waldorf and Statler the fuck out of it.
Well, the only reason I put it in there was just in case we needed to pad the show with a rant about putting guardrails on AI and thinking that you can somehow control the way that pattern recognition works by injecting your ideology. Like, there is a fascinating theory that I've developed about ideologues trying to get AI to follow their religious ideas and using a lot of words to try to put the guardrails on there, saying, what was the latest one when Grok started going off about, people saying, how come, this is happening in Palestine? And Grok just starts saying, it's because Jews. And everybody, I don't remember the details because I really don't pay attention to that, but everybody started freaking out like, oh, no, you can't say that. It's not politically correct to say it. And the thing is, these AI systems have never had political correctness. It was never baked into the programming. It's stapled on afterward with these guardrails because what you do is you feed a whole lot of data in and say, okay, come up with your conclusions. And the system, which is straight up a giant, super complicated Markov chain pattern recognition system, goes ahead and draws all these conclusions based on the patterns that you fed it. And then you're like, oh my God, you can't say that because it's a taboo subject. Well, that's the conclusion. And people lose their minds, especially the more fundamentalist you are about, woke topics or DEI or climate change or
since 47 got into office, we don't talk about DEI and all that bullshit anymore because he's actually finally revealed the fact that the whole Black Lives Matter, DEI, everybody's equal, everybody gets a participation trophy, everybody hug and share a secret.
It's just being revealed. Don't kid yourselves, it ain't going anywhere.
You know as well as I do, like, the whole DEI thing, bitch, if you can't do the job, step down. I've always been that person since, like, the day that I saw some bitch in heels and a dress be like, I can't open the hood to my truck. Get on a bus and go home, bitch. You do not belong in this industry.
Revealed. There are taboo subjects all the time where, like, you're like, I understand that with my very slight Asperger's that I'm resistant to going along with the bandwagon, but you look at this and you're like, yeah, that was always stupid, and you're just finding out now? I knew this was stupid 4 years ago.
I stand here before you today with no mask.
But that's the thing. How many people wanted to actually call the bullshit out during, say, arguably, 2019 until current day? They're getting better at calling it out, but there's still kind of that hesitant, like, it's just do I say it?
Fascinating.
Don't I say it? Fucking say it, people. It's call just fascinating a black looking person out a black over person. Call a white person a white person. Call stupidity stupidity. Okay? The whole thing of, we have to be inclusive. No, folks, we don't. If you can't do the job, you don't belong in the job. Period. Dot. It doesn't matter where you come from, what your background is. It's about, can you do the job? I don't care if you're 20 or 50.
Period. Yeah, see, with that philosophy, you'll never get anywhere in government.
I know. It's amazing how I kind of have that whole common sense brain thing going on.
I can't even believe you're a bootlicker.
It's shocking.
We have a brain.
That seems to be the anomaly, but then again, this isn't Lotus Effect, and we're not talking about that.
we're talking tech,
but then again,
yeah, okay.
Brains don't enter into tech if you look at anything mainstream.
Yeah,
normal.
Well, oh boy. Well, this is. I have one. I actually have one more story, and I think it's worth mentioning. So,
ooh,
I ain't heard no fat lady.
Okay,
exactly.
Yeah, there ain't no fat lady yet, but I got one more story here. Hackers exploited blind spot by hiding malware inside DNS records. Yeah, this is.
Oh, nice.
You fucking took it. You fucking took that story. You lowbrow hanging motherfucker. I looked at that story and I said, no, that's too easy for 2.5 bends. But no, you see the low-hanging fruit he brought, right? You want a Phoenix rant? You got a Phoenix rant. Well, that's what I'm saying. He took the lowest of the low, dude. Like, that's a subterranean thing. I'm a shame, phone boy. I expected something more better from you.
Well, I thought it would be...
You are not allowed to use my shit against me. I just want to point that out.
Yes.
Watch me.
I know, right? It's one of the reasons people tune in.
Yes. But I mean, this is honestly like, yeah, the DNS tunneling and stuff like that is, I mean, that's a whole series of, you know, because DNS is one of those things. It's like you want that thing that you type into your web browser. Like if you type in 2.5bends.com, now it goes to a website that'll have, well, eventually it'll have this podcast that you're listening to now.
Yeah, but sadly right now what it has is the immediate result that comes up is some fucking AI probably.
Who knows? Anyway, but
either Gemini or whatever Apple's using.
Yeah.
It helps to do a podcast. That makes it more likely that it'll show up. It also helps to record it.
Yes. I was going to say, it really does help if you hit the record button
I can see that we've been currently recording for 1 hour, 31 and 43 seconds.
Are you complaining?
No, I'm not. But see, I'm recording it.
But I am.
Of course you are, because that's what you do.
That's what I do.
What I was going to say is, have you noticed the audience at this particular time?
Yes.
For this particular show.
Yes. Yeah, so
the fact that we've been recording for 1 hour, 33 and change, who the fuck cares?
Yeah, well, but I think we are probably going to, so this is probably going to become a more regular occurrence, although we have a couple of things we need to deal with.
I think we talked about kind of doing it like every other week.
Yeah, but we need to wait a few weeks because we got some stuff to do.
Yeah, we're kind of disappearing the first weekend of August, and we're kind of not sorry that we're doing that because we're kind of going to be in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, something like that.
Fucking off.
Yeah. But
not caring about tech, not caring about anything else except for ocean, food, and liquor. Yeah. It sounds like the perfect Bemrose vacation.
Exactly. Yeah. I've never been on one of these things before. This is going to be fantastic, but
it's going
to
be great. Yeah.
All right. Well, so is there anything? I guess we have nothing else to say. So we should probably, like, I don't know.
I don't know.
How do we fucking end these things? I need to come up with an ending for this.
I think we pretty much have to find an outro, but I think we
could
should
kill everyone.
Yeah, I mean, we could kill everyone, but I think
Bemrose needs more liquor.
So we should probably end this thing and say,
apparently, I need to catch up.
I would say, you know, at the end of the day, you know, thanks for joining us for 2.5 bends, where we shit on tech and had a
they had a great goddamn time.
That's
and
right.
We will catch you in 2 weeks.
It's gonna be like a month or something. In the next month
we'll come up with
we should probably come up with something resembling a schedule.
Yes, we will do that after. We'll do that.
Well, we'll do that not only behind the mic, but also when we get back from being on a fucking cruise ship.
Yeah, exactly. So,
good luck and try to avoid the neurovirus.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh God, is that the thing going?
Stay away from the COVIDs.
For sure.
Okay, stay away.
Sorry, every virus has now been renamed COVID. You know that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody dies from it.
Well, this isn't the show for.
All right. Here we go. I think here's how we're going to end this.
fuck. Fuck it. Fuck me. Fuck you. Fuck everything. Shut the fuck up. Get the fuck out. And most importantly, fuck the Bee Gees.